Coming up on today's show,
there are people out there that will like your art. It's just trying to get it in front of them. And because of social media, it's never been easier.
Ladies and gentlemen, theys and thems and everyone in between, please welcome to the stage the hilarious redhead, Sarah Hester Ross.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Remember, too, about the other free option for interaction with this show that I've been mentioning the last few weeks, Featured Up, which you can find a link to in this episode's description. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Las Vegas, my guest is a singer, songwriter, piano player, and comedian who has a new comedy special that just came out 2 months ago on Apple TV, Amazon Prime, and YouTube. She was featured on America's Got Talent and has been named Best Comedian by the Las Vegas Review Journal and Best One-Woman Show by Las Vegas Weekly. She has performed across the country from Los Angeles to Times Square in New York and, of course, there in Las Vegas. She has built an amazing online following with 2.4 million on TikTok alone, plus almost 270,000 on Instagram. Meanwhile, she has approximately 219,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, where her top track has more than 25 million streams, and she has more than 5 million combined video views on her official YouTube channel. You've been hearing a track called Don't Mess With a Redhead. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Sarah Hester Ross.
Hello, everybody. Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so looking forward to this. Thank you for making time to talk with me today.
Oh, my gosh. It's my sincere pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you. And shame on me. I was talking over the opening track, but tell us about Don't Mess With a Redhead. That track was from a live performance. Where and when was it recorded? Is it from your new comedy special? And for that matter, help me out because I'm so used to always saying to a guest that song, but would you correct me and say that bit?
Well, yes, it can be both. I guess that's kind of where the line that I walk as a musical comedian is what I call myself. I am a comedian, and most of my songs, especially on my comedy special, are comedic music, but they are full-length songs that are bits, basically. So yes, the idea of Don't Mess With a Redhead, which is the name of my comedy special, if and when your audience searches it on Apple TV or Amazon Prime, and it's just calling out the normal redhead jokes that people say pretty often, and I've been a redhead all my life, so I get them and have gotten them a lot, and just kind of calling out like how old they are, how like, you know, old hat, and kind of giving my spin on it, and the idea that like redheads are like fiery, angry, and so I kind of lean into that a little bit, which is fun, and the visual representation that we don't get just by listening to it is that I'm playing a Roland keytar. Fire red black keys keytar standing there, you know, rock and roll kind of vibe. And, you know, I'm making fun of the fact that, you know, saying, hey, does the downstairs match the drapes? You know, kind of stuff like that. And I think the visual really helps with the joke as well. So.
Well, I'm glad that you walked us through all that. And audience, I'm sorry that I was talking over it, but it's going to give you all the much more incentive to go look for the Don't Mess With a Redhead special talking about. So that track, that actual MP3 that I just played, Sarah, is that from the special? And
it is.
Where was that special recorded and when?
It was in North Hollywood last year in April. But the process to getting to that was 3 years in the making. I wrote that song about 4 years ago when I was kind of getting into writing original comedy, and it just kind of, because the topic was so near and dear to my heart, it was extremely easy to do. If you ask around town in Las Vegas here, it was the first song that I started to do in cabarets. There's a composer showcase that happens at the Smith Center pretty often, and it was the first song that I did for the community here as a original comedy songwriter. And so it's really near and dear to my heart, the song itself, which is probably why I was so inclined to name my comedy special Don't Mess with a Redhead.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a great song. I'm kind of poking fun at like 80s rock anthems at the same time, which, you know, the keytar goes along with it. And then there's like this huge breakdown at the end where I'm yelling at the audience to clap. And, it's a good time. So,
and audience, you're going to hear Sarah and I are going to make a great connection throughout this interview. We were having some fun before I hit the record button, and it turns out that we know a lot of the same people, guests that you have heard here on Now Hear This Entertainment. One of them that I mentioned to her is very recent. Back in March when I was in Las Vegas and I interviewed Tracyon Martin. Since Sarah just mentioned the keytar, Tracyon Martin plays keytar. She performs in one of the Cirque shows in Las Vegas. So go back and look for that interview. That was episode number 531. In the meantime, Sarah, formal congratulations on the new comedy special, Don't Mess with a Redhead.
Thank you.
Which I mentioned in the intro, is now on Apple TV, Amazon Prime, YouTube, actually other platforms. Was this a case of, okay, we're shooting my comedy special, there are no do-overs, this has to be a great crowd, it's got to be my best show, or was there any kind of backup plan?
No backup plan, like as in planning, because it was the magic of television. There were a few instances where I got to go back and redo something. I don't want to give it away because it's probably one of my favorite parts of the show. But there was a technical instance where there's this visual bit that I do at the end of a song called New Laws for Men, and it didn't work, and it was very embarrassing. And it was a live audience, and they were very kind. Half of them were fans of mine that have gotten tickets to be in the audience of the live recording, and then half of the audience were like seat fillers, people from around North Hollywood, and it was a great audience. Honestly, there was a time that the Comedy Dynamics is the production company that produced the special, and they sent me a blooper reel, which I haven't decided if I'm going to post yet. But there was this one point in time where the audience was just so overreacting that I broke into laughter. And I'm like, you guys are not allowed to make me laugh, okay? It's supposed to be the other way around. You guys got to calm down with your reactions. And it's so funny. But to answer your question, it was very much a, you know, we're taking it through. Because I am a live performance artist, that's what I was expecting. In hindsight, I kind of wish I had relaxed a little bit more, realizing that, oh, this was a mistake, I can go back. That probably would have helped with my anxiety. But this was the first time I had done anything like this.
You know, I heard somebody say recently that recording a live album, you can't expect perfection. That when you go see a live show, whether it's a comedian, whether it's a band, whatever it is, there just might be things that happen. And so I think it is a combination of the things that you just said. You know, had I loosened up a little bit, had I kind of put that upon myself that, hey, things are going to happen. And sure, yes, you know, we could always go back and do stuff with the technology that we have today. One thing that always amazed me, I make no secret about the fact that my all-time favorite band is Rush. And Rush.
Oh my, what a nerd. You're a nerd. Oh my gosh, I'm so happy that I know this about you now.
they recorded like three different shows because they were putting out a live album, and that way they could kind of pick and choose.
Right.
And yet, one of the versions of the song they put out, Getty sings the wrong lyric at one point. And I thought, really? Really? Like, every Rush fan knows every lyric to every song, and you're fine with putting that out there that he sang the wrong lyric.
Oh, but that's kind of like a little nugget for just you guys, you know what I mean? Like, Rush fans are going to know, and that's just for you guys. And that's so special about live entertainment.
Yeah.
The differences between, you know, hearing it on a thing. That's... And I don't want to be overtly negative, but I'm a big fan of the band The Killers. I love them. But then I went to go see their show, and it was like listening to a CD.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So in the difference of, like, granted, it was great. It sounded, it was epic. They were fun to watch. They're good on stage. But it just, like, there was nothing. Like, I could have gotten that experience from hooking it up to a Bose system and listening in my living room. When you go to a live performance, me personally, I want to see something weird. I want to see something different. I want to see them mess up. I want to see, you know, especially with comedians, you know, like, that's too fun to, like, get a comedian to, like, break character and, like, laugh at what's going on in the audience.
The,
and
the
stuff
audience
like that
was too good at my show.
Yes!
I'm thinking of that thing that a lot of people put on social media, which in this case would say the audience was a paid actor, because it's like, oh my gosh, like, the audience was too good at that. It reminds me, there a long time ago, the USA Today, in the sports section, there used to be this ad all the time, the golf ball that actually flies too far. And so we had this great show. The audience was too good at it.
Right. And that's how they were. My audience for the comedy taping, it was great. There were times where it put me at ease because it broke me out of my anxiety and my thought process, and it's just like, you know what, this is a live show and I should be treating that. I've been doing live shows since I was 4 years old. Just relax, you know what I mean? So it was good. It was good.
So on that note, there are going to be lots and lots of Sarah Hester Ross fans who come to this episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. And for that, I'm most grateful. Hello. Thank you. Welcome. Do please listen to some other episodes of the show. But over my 10 plus years of doing this show every week, I have been fortunate to get listeners from 165 countries around the world. So there are going to be people just quote unquote meeting you for the first time. You are originally from right here in Tampa. And similar to last week, when Mark Parfit told an amazing story of originally eyeing Full Sail University in Orlando, but ultimately working in recording studios here in Tampa, and now having his own studio out in Los Angeles, your journey, Sarah, goes the other way, from here to Orlando and then to the entertainment mecca that is Las Vegas.
Yes. Yeah. Born and raised in Tampa, Florida. I did move to Orlando right after I graduated college, and I got into the theme park scene. I auditioned a bunch of times for Disney with no avail, but then I finally got my shot at Universal Studios, and my first show, professional show there, was the Beetlejuice show. Mm. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it was iconic. It's no longer there, unfortunately, but I was a huge honor to be a part of that. And then Grinchmas, I got in,
But were you not also at Busch Gardens here in Tampa?
That was, yes, that was so long ago. I was actually 11 years old when I started working at Busch Gardens.
Wow.
It was a jukebox musical show that I did with a girls group called Entertainment Review. And every summer from when I was 11 to almost 16, I would work at Busch Gardens, and it was so fun.
So you weren't kidding before when you said you've been putting on shows for people since you were four, because here you are at 11. You're already at Busch Gardens. You eventually moved to Orlando. You're working at Universal. So what happens that you end up doing what you were doing in Orlando, looking like, okay, things are moving for me, and then you move to Las Vegas?
I did. And, you know, it's pretty interesting because Vegas was a, like, crapshoot for me.
Mm. No pun intended.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to intend it. And I was working at a dueling piano bar in Orlando called Howl at the Moon. I don't know if you're familiar with it. And I had been working there for about 6 months. And the man that I was seeing was in Las Vegas. And I had heard that dueling pianos was kind of a big thing in Las Vegas. So I packed up my entire life and drove across the country.
Wow.
In hindsight, it was probably not the best decision because I had only been seeing this man for about 6 months. And now I'm just like moving across country, not necessarily for him. Thankfully, it worked out. We've been together for over 10 years now.
Wow.
But yeah, it was a good move. It was a good, solid move for me.
Outstanding.
And now here in Vegas, I'm working full time at the piano bar at New York Hotel and Casino.
Stop it. Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
I'm there 3 nights a week, Fridays, Sundays, and Tuesdays. If I'm not on the road traveling with my comedy show, that's where you'll find me. And it's good. I love it. It's my moneymaker. I'm very, very happy to be there. I was the only woman working there for about 4 years. And now I have another woman working with me, and we play together on Tuesdays, which is so much fun. If you've ever been to a dueling piano show, just imagine it with two mouthy broads, and it just kind of ups the ante, I think. So.
Okay, this is perfect. And audience, I promise you, I did not send Sarah the questions in advance, but my wife and I have discovered that we actually love dueling piano shows. I had seen the one that you're referring to, Inside New York, New York, in Las Vegas.
Okay.
But she and I together, interestingly enough, she and I saw Nicholas Wells. He was the guest on episode 204 of my Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. He was making a guest appearance playing in the dueling piano show at Jelly Rolls, which is over in the Disney Boardwalk in Lake Buena Vista, the greater Orlando area. And then my wife and I also went to a dueling piano show in March of last year in San Diego. We have been to Hollow at the Moon in Orlando a couple times. And ironically, a few months ago, on episode 529 of this show, Susan of the music duo Cliff and Susan said that she used to perform in a dueling piano show in Las Vegas. What I wondered in the lead up to today, Sarah, is how much does doing dueling pianos prepare you for the spontaneity of comedy and of being interactive with the audience? And when you first started into dueling pianos, did you know that it would help that way, or was comedy not on your radar yet at the time that you were starting into dueling pianos?
Well, that's a really great question. Thanks for asking me, because I do feel it's hard to explain to people who don't know dueling pianos and have never experienced that dueling pianos was such a huge inspiration and drive for what I do in my comedy. In Orlando, when I first started dueling pianos, I was just kind of thrown into it because I was going through some vocal issues. And instead of quitting music altogether, I had this friend that was working at Howl at the Moon. They say they want to hire women on the regular. And so I auditioned because I know my circle of fifths. I wasn't a piano player. I'm still not a piano player.
Interesting.
I would never call myself a pianist. I am a entertainer that knows my circle of fifths, is how I explain it. And so I auditioned and they hired me and I started learning songs. And I quickly found out that comedy was a big part of my dueling piano show. I think that I've always naturally been funny. It comes from my dad. He was a really funny little Jewish man. And that's kind of where I get my sarcasm. My humor is kind of darker side, probably more political than I would like it to be, but it just kind of leans that way. And so when I got into dueling pianos, they have these things called call downs. And so when people are there celebrating a birthday or there's a bride or a groom, they let us know and we bring them down to the pianos and kind of poke fun at them. So I wrote my very first call down, my original call down, because all the call downs that I had experienced were written by men. And it didn't really flow coming from a woman's perspective.
Okay.
And so I started writing my own. And the very first one that I wrote was called Vibrators Are a Girl's Best Friend to the tune Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. And it blew up. Like, actually, that was my first viral video when I put it online on TikTok during the pandemic. And people really, really like it. And I'm so glad because I love it too. And I had a colleague of mine tell me, Sarah, you're funny. You should leave and go to Vegas and learn how to do this show.
Wow.
Because you're not going to learn how to hone your comedy here at the Howl at the Moon.
Mm.
And for those of you who don't understand that, the Howl at the Moon is more of like a club vibe. And the old school dueling piano is more of like a dirty bar vibe where, you know, you're sitting arm's length away from the audience and you're poking fun at them. It's more of a comedy club vibe,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
And that's what you get at New York, New York. And so it changed my life, really, when he said that. He's like, you're funny. You need to go learn the gig properly somewhere else. And that's why I moved to Vegas. And I didn't actually start playing in Vegas right away. I got on the, there's a piano bar, like, traveling circuit that I got on. I got on some lists and they hired me in Oklahoma and Portland. And because I was at a new club every weekend, I just honed in on my audience participation, my improvisational work, and most importantly, my comedy.
But was that you figuring it out along the way, or was there somebody kind of guiding you and a mentor that maybe phone calls, face-to-face, Zoom, something? Or was it, no, I was literally just baptism by fire, Bruce. Everywhere I went, I was teaching myself.
I wouldn't say that I didn't have any influence. I wasn't influenced by the people that I played with, but there was no mentor. There was no, it was definitely hop on stage, see what works. Am I across from a partner that's going to go back and forth, or do they just want to do their own thing, which then made me have to create a show where, oh, I'm going to do my own thing too.
See.
And it turned into a lot of comedy and audience-driven responses and ultimately just improv. And now, once you see me, I've been doing dueling pianos for almost 10 years now. Ah, that's wild. And it is heavily, heavily comedy-driven. But on the flip side of it, I've been a singer, vocalist my entire life.
Mm.
And so that's one of the reasons why I just love dueling piano so much, that I could do a bit where I could do a call down, Vibrators Are Girls' Best Friend, and then turn around and do my version of Bobby McGee, Janis Joplin, and just drop the room.
Love it.
You know what I mean?
Love
and
it.
So, and that's so fun for me. And that's kind of what I wanted to create with my comedy shows.
Let's go back. Hold on, because from the category of insert applause track here.
Okay.
I want to go back and recognize and spotlight the fact that you wrote your first call down and it just took off. And it just was so well received, because when you're in that spot, and what I'm hearing is, we all know that there's no shortage of vocal coaches, but it sounds like there are no piano bar coaches that you go to on the side during the day for training. And so to write your first one, and it's that good that the guy at Howl at the Moon in Orlando says, you're funny, you need to go to Vegas. That's tremendous. And P.S., my dad, he's always been my hero. I always used to be the same way as you, is like, oh, daddy's so funny. If I could be half as funny as him someday. And my dad was the one who first introduced me to that piano bar at New York, New York.
Cool.
He goes and he sits outside that little pizzeria and he just watches it, you know, through the doorway from out in the hallway. And that's what I've always done. I mean, he's still alive, but as, you know, as an ode to him, when I'm going to Vegas without him, which is most of the time, I sit in that table outside that pizzeria and I watch the dueling piano show at New York, New York from over there. And it's probably been you at least once that I've seen it.
Oh, that's so special. I love that. Thank you for sharing that with me. That's lovely.
Let me get back on track here, because like so many other people, the pandemic had a big impact on your livelihood, except in your case, it was in a good way. Explain what took place.
Yeah, it really was just right place, right time kind of thing for me, Bruce. I lost my live gig, like everybody else in the world, and I just had so much time on my hands that, and I love to shout out my boyfriend for this. He's also a musician, touring musician, writer. He's with a band called Last in Line. I don't know if, are you fans of Dio?
Ronnie James Dio?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the band Dio, too. So when Ronnie died, his band got back together and put a band together called Last in Line, and my boyfriend is the singer of that band.
Oh, nice.
So if you like that kind of genre, you should definitely check them out. They've got three original albums, which are wonderful. But during the pandemic, we were both stuck in the house, and he was doing projects and recording, and I was like, well, I'll do that too. But we have a little studio, and it's not big enough for two people. So he created a studio for me upstairs, and I got on TikTok, and I started putting my comedy out, and it just blew up. And the numbers started rising, and people started following me based on these specific comedy bits. And I started researching trends and writing songs like along with those trends, and it just skyrocketed. And that's what gave me the confidence to start doing my one-woman show here in Vegas.
Okay.
I wrote all of these songs during the pandemic, and I had a few from the piano bar, like Vibrators Are a Girl's Best Friend, and and my like parody works, that I put a show together, and I got on stage when everything opened back up, and it led all the way to filming my comedy special for Apple TV, which was, you know, right now the peak of my career at this point.
Well,
so
post-pandemic, you, as a result of what you just described, got a three-month residency in Las Vegas. What venue was that in? And then, do I have this correct? You used that as a springboard to then take the show out on the road?
That's correct. Yeah, it was at a venue called Notoriety. It's downtown Fremont Street. The owner of Best Agency opened it right before the pandemic, bless his heart. And then everything closed down. And now it's a, you know, thriving venue here in Vegas.
Awesome.
They put on tons of shows. But yeah, they let me put my residency up there for 3 months. And it was really, it was a eye-opening experience, not all positive, but I learned a whole lot. And then because of the reviews that I got, I was able to get a booking agent who got me touring around the country, which was even a bigger learning curve for me, because I very quickly learned that numbers on social media does not equal numbers and ticket sales.
Wow.
So you know, that was tough. It was a tough sell. And coming out of the pandemic, people learning that they don't need to go out and buy tickets. They don't need to do that. It was, even today in the piano bar, we're still like not back to pre-pandemic, you know, audiences. I think all of Vegas is seeing that in general.
No comment.
No comment.
Let me do this break, but folks, there's going to be a great lesson in what Sarah just said. I love, Sarah, that you pointed out that social media following does not automatically equate to the ticket sales that a performer would expect, that a venue would expect. Let me reset first. I'm joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Las Vegas by singer, songwriter, I don't care, I'm going to say piano player, and comedian Sarah Hester Ross. Visit her official website at sarahhesterross.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Sarah's new comedy special, Don't Mess with a Redhead, is now on Apple TV, Amazon Prime, and YouTube. Additionally, wow, you heard me say back in the intro about the huge numbers she has on Spotify. Give her a follow on there, although don't just stream. Please purchase downloads from Apple Music and other online digital music retailers. For that matter, there is an extensive line of merch that you can purchase in the store section of sarahhesterross.com. She is all over social media. At the top of her website, look for the logos to link over to Sarah's TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. What am I doing on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast that you like and wish I would do more of? What am I doing that you don't like and wish I would do less of? Thanks to the OWL app, you can call and talk about the show, or maybe even ask for help with podcasting yourself. Take advantage of the 875 career podcast episodes that I have now hosted, and let me weigh in on whatever challenges you might be having. OWL, and that's like the bird except with two W's and two L's, is a social networking platform that connects people instantly through private one-on-one audio calls. On my podcast website, nhte.net, tap or click into the news section and then look for the article in there under the headline, Help Now a Phone App Call Away. The OWL app is free to download, and I have links in that article to get it from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, I have my invitation code in that article because you will need that as you're setting up your app on the phone. It's a required field. Get on OWL and make valuable connections for your career. Sarah, I am used to asking songwriter guests, what is your songwriting process? In your case, I would love for you to pull back the curtain and walk us through your comedy special process and everything involved in putting something like that together.
Well, the process was over the span of when I opened my one-woman show during my residency in Vegas to, you know, touring it and then coming back and thinking about what worked, what didn't work, reordering the show. Mm. That was a huge process. And I'm very grateful that I had that time to do that because I'm not a normal, I like to put in air quotes, comedian. I'm not a stand-up comedian. So I, going into stand-up clubs and opening for someone is not really an option for me because of the musicality of my show. So the fact that I was able to do the work that what a comedian would go in and do a guest spot or an opening or a feature work, but I was doing it by myself in my shows on tour. That was the work that I needed to do for the process of getting to what is now Don't Mess With a Redhead comedy special on Apple TV.
Okay.
But I think that I still can answer your question, like as a songwriter, because all the songs in my comedy special were written because of social media trends. You know, I do lean to the side of feminist material,
sure,
mostly because it's what I care about and mm-hmm. it's what affects me in my daily life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with everything that's going on with Roe v. Wade being overturned and now what's going on with contraceptives being banned and stuff like that, it just, it opened the floodgates for me to be able to write songs about this topic, but at the same time being tongue-in-cheek. So it, as I like to say, the musical comedy helps the feminism go down a little bit.
Mm.
You know, I play on words of medicine. It's just like, it lets me be able to talk about these subjects with a little bit more like finesse. And that's what I love about musical comedy. And so it's always been my thing when it comes to writing a song, does this topic matter to me? Mm, what do mm-hmm. I have to say that just talking about it is not enough? You know what I mean? For me, and to maybe help the conversation move forward a little bit. So that is my writing process when it comes to comedy music and just music in general.
I like that point that you made about it has to matter to you, because I imagine you have to get approached both physically and virtually by so many people saying, you should do something about insert topic here. And it's like,
all the
it
time.
Doesn't even matter if it's funny or not. It's just like, I don't care about that. Like, no, that topic doesn't matter. So I'd rather use my creativity towards something that means something to me, because I have to be authentic on stage.
Yes. And I'm already at a disadvantage because musical comedy is not as popular as stand-up comedy, even though there are so many successful musical comedians, you know, Tenacious D, Jack Black, Rachel Bloom, Bo Burnham, Carol Burnett. All of these people are extremely successful in their musical comedy realm. But when people go to a comedy show, they're expecting stand-up. So I'm a little disadvantaged in the fact that not everybody likes musical comedy.
Interesting.
They think that it's awkward or, you know, over the top and cringe. And, you know, I'm like, screw you guys. I'm doing this. I am a musician and now I am a comedian and I don't want to choose between the two. And I don't feel like I have to. And I feel like it's creating not that I'm creating a path, but I'm creating my own path when it comes to comedy, entertainment, and music in general. And I also feel very, very fervently about the fact that I don't want my music just to be funny. I want it to be good music.
Mm.
I'm a musician first and foremost. So when you listen to my songs, I am hoping that you're going to like the musicality of it just as much as the message.
Wow. Wow. But how different is it to write a song versus writing a comedy bit? I'm tempted to say compare and contrast music versus comedy, but it makes me think of Robin Williams doing a bit where he said, I will compare and contrast Jesus and Spider-Man. So how do you come down on that? Because I'm sure, and you're going to say, actually, Bruce, you're 100% wrong. Please drive ahead. But writing a song versus writing a comedy bit?
It's very different. I would even say writing a song for me is harder than a comedy bit because I am so confident to this point in my creation of comedy songs that if I think it's funny, I know someone else is going to think it's funny. Then as a musician, if I think it's good, that doesn't mean I'm going to get a conversation started about it. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
I wrote a song, which I do live in my shows because I love it so much. And that's another thing about my live shows. Like, I don't do just comedy. I like to throw in cover songs every once in a while that I'm learning and or I'm loving. And then I have my own original, quote unquote, normal songs that are not bits, that are not comedy.
I love it.
And one of my favorites, and I feel like is the most popular, is called Life Goes On. I wrote that during the pandemic, and it got a little traction online, but because I had created this platform on comedy, when I put just regular music out, it doesn't catch on as well as my comedy bits. And I like to think that it's because it doesn't start the conversation that my comedy songs do.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah. I hadn't considered that, but that's wow. Fascinating stuff. I want to back up. You started to mention a few different names. I'm wondering, what is your view of women in comedy in 2024?
I mean, it is vastly changing. And you can see that from women like Nicole Zegler, who is just getting huge recognition from her roast of the football player.
Tom Brady,
yes. She's blowing up all over the place, which she was one of, what, two women on the roast? Mm. But because she was so good and so smart, she is being recognized out of, you know, 20 men who were on that roast as well, but because she stood out not only as a woman but just as a comic. And women are getting recognized in comedy finally on an appropriate level, because there are such good women comics out there doing unique things and talking about unique subjects that are important to everyday life. They're not just making dick jokes anymore. Oh, I'm so sorry. I hope that's okay that I can phallic jokes if you need to edit that.
Jimmy Fallon jokes? What did you say?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, these women are doing thoughtful topics of bits, and they're getting recognized, and it's wonderful to see. I don't consider myself a stand-up comic, and it's because I know what I do is not stand-up, and it's because I respect the art of stand-up comedy so much. It's why I call myself a musical comedian. But I love stand-up, and I love women in comedy. I just think that women have so much to say, and, you know, when you find a clever way to do it, it's unique and ingenious, and it should be celebrated. So.
Well, and when someone goes and sees a female comedian, a female stand-up comic, and they don't think they're funny, it's no different. You don't automatically dismiss females aren't funny. They shouldn't be comedians. Do you go and see one performer somewhere and he is bad, and you dismiss all men and say, There's no good country singers out there. There's no whatever.
Exactly.
Like, no, that's just one bad night that you saw somebody that, you know, isn't at the top of their game. So, you know, give someone else a chance. My gosh, don't paint everybody with the same brush. I'm always sensitive to listeners of this show who are aspiring performers themselves. Nowadays, it's easy to fall into the thinking of, if I could just get one of my TikTok videos to go viral, that will launch me. To me, the odds of that are only slightly better than me, Bruce Wozniak, saying, if I could just go to Publix and get the winning Powerball numbers for Wednesday Night Strong, I will be set for life. In both cases, by the way, it reminds me of the old Steve Martin bit where he said, you can be a millionaire and never pay taxes. You say, yeah. Steve, how can I be a millionaire and never pay taxes? And then he says, first, get $1 million. Now, Sarah, you became social media, TikTok famous. What are your thoughts? Is it a case of, Bruce, the odds aren't as long as you're making them out to be? Or would you advise aspiring performers to absolutely not wait around for that to happen?
Absolutely not wait around. But that doesn't mean stop. I think social media is now a proven vessel and tool to help aspiring artists. I don't think necessarily going viral should be your ultimate goal, but creating an audience. And it's never been easier to do that. There are people out there that will like your art. It's just trying to get it in front of them. And because of social media, it's never been easier. Consistency is what I would say to anyone trying to grow their numbers and find that audience. Pick a niche, whether it is, you know, music, like in a genre or songwriting or lyrical or whatever. Once you start posting that, keep posting things like it. Research the app. Whatever app that you're on, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Snapchat, research the app, be on the app, see what other people that you admire and what they are getting success of numbers. Success is a very broad term, by the way. What they're doing, and try to emulate that. That's what I did when I first started. I looked at other comics who were getting success on that, and I just kind of tweaked it in my own way to put it. And then the algorithm is not our friend and it's against us, but consistency, they can't fight consistency.
Yeah.
And so the more you post, the more like a person that sees a video will see your next video, will see your next video, and then ultimately getting them to your Spotify and to possibly see you live one day. And that's the goal, ultimately, is to create an audience.
I love it.
And using social media is extremely helpful.
I love it. And I will carry the flag for consistency till the cows come home. I've never missed a week in more than 10 years of doing this show. And a lot of people say, don't you get tired? Don't you want to take a week off? Number one, I still absolutely enjoy the heck out of doing this show. But number two, I know how important consistency is. And you got to show up for people, and people are going to notice it. And then it's going to be the trickle down effect, the snowball that you just described. I'm tempted to ask you, Sarah, about the performance you did in Times Square last August. But at the same time, I'm also wondering if there is just one absolute most memorable performance you've done somewhere. And if so, why it stood out so much.
Probably my most memorable performance right now is my Tampa at the Tampa Improv. Florida was my first stop on my tour 2 years ago, and I did Orlando, Naples, and Tampa. And Tampa was just so special to me. Not only is that venue just absolutely gorgeous, if you ever get to, it's like an old vaudeville theater, and it's so beautiful and it's so well maintained, and the staff and the tech guys were just so on point. And that's a big thing for me when I'm traveling, because my show is so tech involved. Having a venue that is tech capable and, you know, with video and audio and has like tech guys, not all comedy clubs have that, because, you know, they're used to a person standing with a microphone, so it's not necessarily high tech involved. I come with literal baggage. So, but I feel like the show itself was just so memorable because it was my home and I had so many people there, not only fans, but friends and family that were just so supportive. And it was a sold out show. It was one of my only sold out shows on the tour. And it felt great. It felt so good. And because it was at the beginning, it was just so encouraging to have an audience like that. And just, yeah, I'll hold that in my heart for a long time.
Well, and let's face it, when someone like you is doing a show like that, and you know there's going to be tons of friends and family, everyone can turn out for you. But at the end of the day, your act still needs to be great, because someone can show up and go, I'm here for her, but it's actually not that funny. And it really does go a long way with you when you say, no, these were people that were there to support me, family and friends, and I know that I killed. It was a great show every way it could be.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I am a 120% energy entertainer. I give everything I have, and sometimes it's detrimental to my voice. Like, and I don't necessarily thrive off the audience. But when I do have an audience that is just so with me, it bumps me up 10 points. And I'll always give my all in a show. But when I have a good audience, it just feels, it just like resonates in you. And that was definitely one of those shows.
There will be
for
no
sure.
meet and greet after tonight's show, as Sarah absolutely wears herself out.
Sarah is now napping.
But the show just ended 2 minutes ago. She's napping. Yeah, trust me.
She's napping. We carried her off stage, actually.
Before we wrap up, we talked a lot today about music and comedy, and I wonder if you have any insight from the performer side into the contrast that is music fans go see a concert and they want the artist to do all the songs they know and love. But with a comedian, it's not, oh my gosh, I hope they do the joke about X, or wow, I can't believe they didn't do their bit about X.
Yeah. I think I get a pass on this one because people do want to hear my bits. They want to hear the songs. They want to hear my big ones are Stop Giving Men Microphones and No Babies. Those have been my biggest Spotify plays and my biggest hits on social media. And people know me from those. Also, my Florida Man Friday bits. People are expecting me to do those.
Okay, interesting.
And I definitely do them. But to that, as a live performer that never wants to, when I go to a show, I don't want to see the same show twice. I switch things up all the time. But you will probably not for a while catch me doing a live show without doing Stop Giving Men Microphones.
We're going to close today with another track of Sarah's called Don't Be a Ball Sack. It occurred to me, Sarah, as I listened to this, that on this recording, you have musical support on stage with you, drums, one or more background singers, and probably others. Tell us about this bit, but also, does it change your show at all when you want to perform this live, but it's just you on stage alone? And by the way, is this recording from your new comedy special?
It is. It is from my comedy special. This is the live version. I do have a studio recording of it, and its own music video is out on YouTube, which is one of my favorites because the dancing and the choreography is just so fun. But the song is basically, it's not a new phenomenon. I get it commented all the time that Betty White had this bit where why do we call people pussies when they're being weak or stupid, or because pussies push out human beings, and really ball sack scrotums are what we should be calling people that are weak, because you know, one little flick and that man is down for, you know, a couple of hours. And so the bit itself, the idea, is nothing new. I think Sarah Silverman actually just came out with her own bit about it on her last special. But I like to say that I'm not necessarily putting out new information. I'm just putting a new spin on it. And the song, it's a completely original comedy song about that topic. And I feel like it's just fun. It's a fun little ditty that makes you think, and it gives the reasons why this should change and all this stuff. And it's in the genre of like a boy band 90s R&B vibe, which I love. But yeah, so it's one of my favorite bits. And I think it's potent and topical and, you know, lighthearted at the same time. So,
and audience, I am not going to talk over it. You are going to get to hear it in its entirety, but I am going to very much encourage you to look for Sarah's new special in its entirety. But before I do that, let me thank Sarah. It was wonderful to meet you. Thank you for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. I really enjoyed the conversation, and congratulations on your new special.
Thank you so much, Bruce. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. My pleasure. With that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, piano player, musical comedian, Sarah Hester Ross. Do visit her official website at sarahhesterross.com. Again, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You have heard her talk about her new comedy special, Don't Mess with a Redhead. Do check it out on Apple TV, Amazon Prime, or YouTube. There is actually a comedy special page on sarahhesterross.com, so you can go on there and link over to the platform of your choice. While you are on her website, look for the store section, which has a wide array of merch. Engage with Sarah on social media. This morning, I followed her. Well, Now Hear This Entertainment followed her on Instagram, and I'm sure she would appreciate you doing the same. There are logos on her website for that, as well as TikTok and YouTube. Don't forget to give her a follow on Spotify as well, but look for the Apple Music link on sarahhesterross.com to purchase downloads. Do us both a favor and let Sarah know that you heard her on Now Hear This Entertainment. I say it every week, but I mean it. I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Sarah and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 years without missing once, by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 541. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another track from Sarah Hester Ross. This is the one she just talked about. It is a live recording of Don't Be a Ballsack.
I had a lot of people on that video comment, yeah, don't be a pussy, tie your dick in a bow. Which I love the energy. But I don't like the wording. Ooh. Yo. The English language.
It's so confusing.
It's so confusing sometimes. Words don't even mean what they mean anymore. You know what I mean? Nah, just listen. Now I never understand why calling someone pussy makes them weak. When at the same time saying they have big balls means they can't be beat. So I suggest a tiny change to our vocabulary. Listen to me and I hope you'll agree. It's logical, you see. Let's call them ball sacks. Weak people are ball sacks from now on. Cause just one little pick in that man is down for an hour or two. We're not making a sound cause it's ball sacks. While pussies are pushing on tip out babies. Ball sacks are weak and pussies are strong. So ball sack means you're weak from now on. Like lions in the safari, right? My point stands strong, it's plain to see. So please don't even try. Get with the times, you won't change my mind. If change makes you afraid, then you're a ballsack. Cause yeah, people are ballsacks from now on. Cause pussies think about it in orgasm for days. They clean themselves, they deserve some friends when they're ballsacks. One strong magic. Scared from now on. Come on, Chad. Jump off the bridge. Don't be a ballsack. Ballsack. Hey, Johnny, you afraid of commitment? What a ballsack. Ballsack. I'm sorry, is this song making you mad? It's a joke, brah. Overreact.
From now on, bitch!